Hello, everyone. This is Bob Zeta, N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. We'll be reading World Radio, January 2007 issue. World Radio is published by Armin Noble. Its call is N6WR, and the organization is located at World Radio Incorporated, 2120 28th Street, Sacramento, California, 95818. The phone number is area 916-457-3655. This recording is a production of the Courage Handy Amp System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handy Amp members only. Any other use may violate copyright laws. Handy Amps may be reached at area 763-520-0512 or at email address handyham@courage.org. That's spelled H-A-N-D-I-H-A-M, one word, @courage.org, and the website is www.handyham.org. Let's begin this month with the editor's log. The editor is Nancy Cott, call WZ8C. Since it is January, New Year's resolutions come to mind as an ed log topic. Resolve to try a new mode or get on the air more. Be an Elmer. Finish at least one of the projects you started. The same old resolutions that hams make every year. However, because of the new band plans and the changes in licensing that we have experienced, the new year is presenting new challenges. If we are going to keep the tradition of respect and pride that our radio service deserves, we are going to have to make a resolution of a different type. Being in the public aspect of amateur radio, I have had the opportunity to hear the opinions of many hams for 17 years. I read piles of correspondence and listen to hundreds of people each year at conventions and ham fests all over the country. Amateur radio has gone through many changes, but I have always gotten the feeling that hams were proud to be hams. They had a sense of accomplishment. They belonged to a society of like-minded people who shared their interests. They had earned the right to be a licensed ham by studying and learning, by doing, experimenting with antennas or home brewing, and that's making your own equipment out of kits or pieces, and proving their worth by passing meaningful exams. Lately, it seems like there are two types of new hams. I can't count the number of times people have said, "I have my extra class license, but I don't feel like an extra." Something is missing. It feels like a hollow victory. It doesn't bother the other type at all that they went all the way to extra with hardly any effort. They view the use of all the frequencies as their right. I worry about the new licensees who have that feeling of entitlement. It is human nature to think something is worth what you paid for it. It reminds me of a variation of that credit card commercial. Extra class license. A few hours. Reading a book. Getting on the air. A couple $100 for a radio. Being an extra class ham. So what? Being an extra used to be priceless. It meant years working your way up the ladder, passing exams that actually required you to know radio fundamentals and, yes, 20 words per minute of Morse code. It meant being a part of something special. If this keeps up, amateur radio won't be special anymore. However, the new hams who don't feel like extras can stop this trend by making a resolution to be the extras that deep down they know they want to be. They can resolve to prove, if only to themselves, that their interest in amateur radio goes beyond having that piece of paper and being able to have a ham radio license plate on your vehicle. They can resolve to set aside some time to read a handbook or visit an old-timer who would be thrilled to help them. They can listen to 10 minutes of a code course on a consistent basis. They can hone their operating skills. The key word here is skills, not just operating. The something-for-nothing crowd will fall by the wayside after a while. Ham radio was never their cup of tea anyway. If someone mentions amateur radio to them in a couple of years, they'll wave them off saying, "Yeah, I tried that once. It was boring." However, we know better. We will still be building new antennas so we can feel the thrill of snagging that new county or country, the sense of accomplishment in earning a clean sweep, the satisfaction of public service by helping emergency communications and passing traffic, and the fulfillment of making friends on the air, the way real hams do. Thank you very much for caring enough to take the time to let me know how you feel. Please keep in touch either through our web page at www.wr6wr.com or email me directly at nancy@tir.com. That is nancy@tir.com. And Nancy also suggests that if you'd like to use postal mail, you can send it to Nancy, call sign WZ8C. P.O. Box 807, Hadley, H-A-D-L-E-Y, Michigan, M-I, 48440. Let's go to our first feature, DX World. Now, for your non-ham listeners, DX means distant station contacts outside of the contiguous United States of America. The article is titled Split Operations and Insight from the Other Side. The author, Kelly Jones, call N0VD. I recently had a conversation with Jim Kaler, KH2D, about the expeditions and living on the other side. It was quite interesting to hear things from his perspective. Before I go further, folks, this is Bob, your reader. If you're listening here on the Leisure Pursuits, perhaps for the first time, to the amateur radio portion of the hobby, or on the Courage Handy Ham system, for that matter, you have to understand that these letters and number combinations all represent call signs, and every certified nation in the world or entity has a certain set of prefix. In this case, KH2D. Well, K, it means it's the United States station. The H part could normally be Hawaii, but then again, it also might represent the Pacific Ocean American possessions. So continuing, Jim spent 16 years on the island of Guam before moving back to the States in 2001. During his time on Guam, he learned many valuable operating techniques, including the art of working split, S-P-L-I-T. If you have worked any DX position within the past 10-plus years, you probably ran into a case where the operator was transmitting on one frequency and listening on another. This is what is called split. The reason for working split is to move the pileup away from the DX station's frequency in order to hear who the DX is answering. Again, folks, I'll interject here. Working or moving the pileup, that means hundreds or perhaps thousands of amateurs all over the world who happen to be on that exact frequency and listening to this particular station pass his information or traffic. And if it's a station that is in a very, very distant part of the world or a seldom contacted country, which there are a few in spite of all of our marvelous technology, they're just called rare stations. People with amateur radio licenses from everywhere. It can be somebody in Japan, not just in Massachusetts or California or Hawaii, for that matter, Guam in this case. They're all trying to bang into that radio receiver for that one person listening to see if they can get him to acknowledge his call to them so then they can put him up as a score for a worked another country. It's a lot of nuances here, folks, and I try not to put too many of my own interjecting commentaries along the way, but sometimes I think it helps, especially new hams who are listening perhaps for the first time or two on the Courage Handy Ham System portion, and then, of course, the Massachusetts Reading Network here in the United States. So let's go on. For example, if a DX station has generated a large pileup, it's quite likely that the pileup will be much stronger than the DX station's own signal. When that happens, it's very difficult to hear who the DX is answering because the pileup will keep calling. If he begins working split, the pileup moves, typically, up the band a few kilohertz. Now the DX has a clear frequency, and each time he answers a caller, the rest of the pileup can hear his response. Ultimately, this increases the amount of stations which will be worked because nobody is waiting around trying to figure out who he came back to. You get it? So after having a lively discussion with Jim, if you know Jim, you know about lively discussions, about the virtues of working split, I asked if he'd provide some insight on what it was like to manage the pileups from Guam, which is, of course, an American possession in the far Pacific. Keep in mind, his perspective is from the other side, that of the DX station, not the American station trying to call. You can easily reverse roles and begin to understand what you need to do when calling DX in order to get him in the log. Subtitled, When and How. The goal of the DX operator working the pileup is to work as many stations as possible, as smoothly and as quickly as possible. You are the DX station. You created the pileup. It's up to you to control it. No one is going to control it for you. And an out-of-control pileup is one of the biggest causes of frustration on the high-frequency bands for lots of hams. One of our big problems with pileups is that many of the stations calling can't hear the DX, the distant station, because of the QRM. That's a cue sign, folks, for the hobby. It's noise background, noise being perhaps dozens, hundreds, thousands of other hams sending their signal through the airwaves to that exact frequency that you're sitting at your soft chair listening to try to hear. It gets clearer, even though it's a little confusing. And that DX because of the QRM caused by other stations calling also. The simplest and most efficient system for solving this problem is the split operation, where the DX station transmits on one frequency and listeners on a different frequency or over a range of different frequencies. When do you need to go to a split operation? When the people you are giving reports to are not answering, or when you are not getting your report from the station you are working because of other stations who are continuously calling. Simply, when the QRM or noise level starts slowing you down, split operation moves the QRM and you are no longer forced to wait for 20 or 30 stations to stop calling you so you can work one of them. Modern transceivers, those are radios that receive and send, they're called transceivers, today come equipped with two VFOs. I'm chuckling again, folks. VFOs, I believe that's variable frequency oscillators. I'm getting old and rusty with some of my terminology, but I'm trying. Some of them even come with two receivers, the RIT, that's receiver incremental tuning, on the Azu rigs, the clarifier, can also be used for split operations. The primary goal of a split operation is to get the calling stations, those are the pileup, remember, far enough away from the DX station on the frequency tuner, so that the pileup causes no interference on frequency that the DX station is transmitting on. So now that you've gotten your first lesson in how to work a long distance out of this country station, folks, let's go on with the article. Subsection titled CW splits. Whoops, CW. That's continuous wave. That's called Morse code to most human beings that don't know about ham radio, folks. So, CW splits. For CW operation, 2 kilohertz, KHZ, is usually a good starting point. On CW, you can announce that you are listening up, for example, QRZ, KH2D, UP. You would be doing this in dits and dahs, the old Morse code way, which is usually all that is needed to make the pileup move away from your transmit frequency. If the pileup doesn't respond immediately, and other stations continue to call on your frequency, up to, up to, up 2, up 2, DE, KH2, HD. So he's saying four times in a row, go up 2 kilohertz from, DE is from KH2D, which is the station that is the DX. That will usually do the trick. Simply turn the RIT, receiver incremental tuning. It's like a fine tuner on some of the old radios that used to glow when you turned them on. You could warm the water with them on top, you know. Remember those old timers? And tune up the band and listen for stations calling you. Or, if you prefer, use the other VFO, that's the second one in this fancy modern rig, on your rig to receive. Tune up and down over a range of 2 or 3 kilohertz. Those are 1,000 cycles. Fortunately, there are a few DXs left who are smart enough to just not tune up 2 kHz and send their call a dozen times. It's hard to copy anybody, even with a 250-cycle filter in your rig receiving, when 75 stations zero beat the same frequency. That means, folks, they come right in. Remember the old radios again? It would go... And there it is. Well, that's zero beating. The same frequency and call you. So move your receive frequency around. By moving, you will increase your rate by working the good operators who know what tailgate means. Same as driving a car. Somebody smacks you in the back end when you slow down too quickly, and they hit you in the end. Well, that's what the guys don't move up and down, they keep calling on this frequency, are causing a tailgate situation. And the ones who quickly figure out the direction you are tuning. Oh, here comes another set of letters. On SSB, want to take a guess? Single side band. The process of working a split operation on SSB is basically the same, but since you need to move the pile up further away from your transmit frequency, that's to disable the effect of Mr. Splatter, which is the noise that so many other stations are causing. It's called splatter. Using 2 VFOs is a must. Again, most modern rigs with 2 VFOs have the A equal B button. Press it, which sets the second VFO to the frequency and sideband, that's what sideband is, you are currently operating on. Tell everybody to stand by and then activate the second VFO as the receive VFO. That's the other part of your radio that's able to hear on a different frequency. Tune up or down the band at least 5 or 10 kilohertz. Find a quiet frequency. Good luck. Then announce to the pileup where you will be listening. For example, if you are operating at 14.195, move the pileup to 14.210. Point is decimal here, so that's 14.210. It's fine to move them down, but the usual procedure is to move them up. Again, as on continuous wave, that's Morse code, it's difficult to pick out call signs when too many stations are calling you on the same frequency. Remember, you're listening and they're sending and those dits and dahs that you hear in the movies once in a while. So simply spread them out. Listen from 14.210 to 14.215 or to 14.220. I guess you get the idea, huh? Now, folks, the author Kelly Jones, N0VD, that's November 0, Victor Delta, goes on. Very interesting article, and a good learner for folks that are not at all familiar with some of the techniques that are required to be a good amateur radio operator. But remember, this is a hobby. It's a matter of trying to hone your skills, as was commented to at the beginning of the article. I'm going to finish his lengthy article with Always Remember. Sounds like a song. You are the DX. You created the pileup. You must control it. We all hear the talk after a de-expedition. That was a great operation. Well, that was a total mess. The difference between a great operation and a total mess isn't antennas, radios, amplifiers, or propagation. It's operators that make the difference. Nobody likes to tune down the band and find a total mess, and nobody usually complains much about a good operation. If things get out of control, you must get control back. If one station is causing you problems, tell them about it, bluntly. With all the different languages in the world, I have found over the years that XX1XX, shut up, is usually universally understood, and you know what it is, and that 60 seconds of standby, QRX, standby, QRX, standby, QRX. Again, folks, QRX is actually shorthand for I'm stopping my transmission now. In effect, please wait. That will usually bring a pilot back to reality. You might not make XX1XX happy by telling him to shut up, but I can guarantee you that you will gain the respect of all the good operators who hear you tell him. If you let things get out of control, you not only frustrate yourself, but you also frustrate all the DXers who are trying to work you. If the pilot gets out of control and you can't fix it, do yourself and everyone else on the band a favor. Announce you are going QRT. Another Q sign. We're shutting this rig down, bud. So leave us alone. No, and go watch TV. Come back again tomorrow night. Start over clean. Folks, the author, Kelly Jones, N0VD, concludes the article by, first of all, giving a very special thanks to Jim Kehler. It's spelled K-E-H-L-E-R. His call is Kilo Hotel 2 Delta KH2D for providing his insight on what it's like to live and operate from the other side of the pilot. And also thanks to the OPDX Bulletin for providing additional information for this month's column. You can reach the author at N0VD at DX Central, DXCENTRAL.com. And before I leave the DX News, there is something additional here from DXCC News. Bill Moore, call NC1L, ARRL DXCC branch manager, has announced the following operations are approved for DXCC credit. 3V6T, Tunisia. That's 3 Victor, 6 Tango. Operation from 05 through 15 July 2006 and from 22 through 31 October 2006 and from 22 through 30 November 2006. Another Tunisia call sign, 3 Victor 7 Alpha. Operation from 22 through 31 May 2006. For Ghana, 9G5UR, 9 Golf, 5 Uniform Romeo. Current operation effective 22 September 2006. For the Spratly Islands, 9M0 slant, 9M2TO. Phonetically, 9 Mike 0 slant, 9 Mike 2 Tango Oscar. 9 through 12 June 2006. For the Democratic Republic of the Congo, 9Q1NT, 9, Quebec 1, November Tango, current operation effective 22 September 2006. For Mozambique, the call sign C91TL, Charlie 9, 1, Tango Lima, operation from 29th June through 13 July 2006. Clipperton Island, Fox Oscar, that's F-O slant, Fox 8, Uniform Fox Tango, F-8-U-F-T. Operation from 01 through 31 March 2005. For Market Reef, Oscar Juliet 0, Lima Alpha, that's O-J-0-L-A, Market Reef, from 9 through 15 September 2006. And one more. Auckland and Kemble Island, ZL9BSJ, Zulu Lima 9, Bravo Sierra Juliet. So those of you that might have been working your rigs and gotten in touch with some of these relatively exotic DX stations, you can send them a QSL card and hope to get one back for confirmation for the DX Century contacts. Let's go now to emergency communications, titled Don't Make Excuses, Just Behave. Author is Jerry Wellman, call W7SAR, Whiskey 7 Sierra Alfa Romeo. One of our neighbors obtained a large black dog. It was very friendly, but it was also very loud and barked day and night. The neighbors were seldom seen playing with the dog, leaving many of us in the neighborhood to wonder why they had the dog in the first place. I've always had a dog, and I enjoy them a lot. I know you need to spend some time with your dog, especially when they're young. It also helps to train them not to bark. Or, if you have them for security, to check and see what's going on when they are barking. To just let them wander a small pen and bark isn't very kind to a dog. Mindy and Danny live next door to the yard with a new dog. They got little sleep as the dog barked up a storm for hours on end. Mindy asked the neighbor to keep the dog in, or at least quiet, but her requests were ignored. In desperation, several neighbors contacted the sheriff. After monitoring the barking for a day or two, the owner was given a citation and given several days to respond and also to license their dog with the county. The owner decided to get rid of the dog following the citation, but the story doesn't end there. A couple of days after they had been cited, they came around and confronted many, including Mindy, Danny, and me. The owner was almost as loud as the dog and was just as insensitive. She called us names and accused us of not liking animals. She complained that the county was only out for the money by asking them to license their dog. Then she pulled out the trump card. She said we didn't like them because they were from another country and we were racially biased. This whole incident got me thinking. We've become a people prone to finding excuses, especially when we're wrong and don't want to admit it. In some cases, civility goes out the window. In the case of our barking dog, the owner simply didn't care that their animal was barking for hours and hours and disrupting a number of families. We were inconsiderate and uncaring about others. Fortunately, most of us are considerate and make an effort not to offend others. I remember discovering as a youth learning to drive that the hallmark of good driving was being courteous. Our driving instructor told us the best drivers were those with the best manners, and that driving skills included more than knowing how to make a turn or parallel park. I sense a great number of drivers today do not embrace that philosophy. Sure, there are laws and police officers, but certainly not enough to be a great deterrent to loud dogs or bad driving. It seems we like to get away with bad behavior, and it's okay as long as we don't get caught. One great attribute of most amateur radio operators is their on-the-air skills. If you need help, someone is there. If you have a technical question, someone is there. If your radio is broken, someone will ask if they can help or loan you a radio. If there is an emergency, emergency radio operators are there. I was trying to encourage a fellow to attend a class and become licensed, so I loaned him a radio. Several days later, he expressed greater interest in the hobby because, as he put it, there are, quoting, a lot of nice people, close quote, on the radio. He's reading a book and getting ready to take the test, not because he likes electronics or has a passion for public service, but because he listened to a lot of nice people. Back in the 1960s, I was lured into Citizens Band because of the same reason. My best friend's dad was a CBer, and it was fun to listen to people on his radio and to attend a coffee break when some of the local CBers got together. Not many years later, it was no longer fun to listen to CB radio. It was crude. Operators were seldom helpful and used language you'd never want your kids to hear. Various stations would yell at each other and call them names. It was no fun. So, here's my message. Don't make excuses. Just behave and be considerate of others. I've never heard a station in a foreign country belittle me because I didn't speak their language. In exchanging QSL information, that's the contact between stations, I've had many happy exchanges, if only to be able to communicate a name and address. No one got mad, and no one was called a racist. If someone got beat out trying to work the X, no bad words were exchanged, and no feelings were hurt. In the stressful conditions of emergency service, I've yet to hear vicious exchanges or name-calling. To amateur radio credit, it is still fun to listen to a QSO, that's QSO, that's a two-way conversation that you don't necessarily have to be participating in, but you're hearing it through your receiver. One great program I feel gets little attention is the ARRLs, that's the American Radio Relay League's A1 Operator Club. The A1 Club began in 1933 to recognize good operators. You cannot seek membership on your own. You can only be nominated and seconded by an A1 operator. In short, you have to be noticed, and you never know when or who is listening. What a great thing! On the ARRL website, David Sumner, K1ZZ, said this honors, quoting, the best in amateur radio, close quote. I agree. The sad part is that so few are being nominated each year. The A1 Club focuses on several areas, such as ability to copy traffic, judgment and courtesy, general excellence, and using exemplary procedures. As of November 2006, the roster listed 4,735 club members. This is far too few. I've listened to many nets and conversations, and the number of A1 club members should be larger. Now, I said you cannot seek your own membership. I was wrong. You can. And you should. Here's the trick. When you're on air, be the caliber of operator that could be nominated for a membership. Aspire to be the best in amateur radio. You are encouraged to operate at your very best, not because the FCC might cite you or that someone will call the animal services to issue you a citation for biting someone over the air, but because you're considerate of others and appreciate that they're human, just like you. You are encouraged to remember that people do make mistakes, inadvertently offend someone, and maybe say something they don't really mean. And most of all, don't make excuses. If you offend someone or do something unkind, step up and take the blame rather than go on the offensive, such as claiming racial bias. If your dog is barking, go find out why and at least don't let the dog offend others. If you're on the air, act as if hundreds of other people are listening to you. Be your very best. Folks, Mr. Wellman goes on reflecting on 2006 and credentials and such, but we'll leave it at that for this edition of Emergency Communications. Jerry Wellman, called W7SAR, can be reached by sending mail to P.O. Box 11445, that's 11445, Salt Lake City, Utah, UT, zip code 84147. Or you can send Jerry email at lowercase, these are initials, jw@desnews.com. Folks, you're listening here to the reading of the January 2007 World Radio Magazine. Every couple of months, there's another very special section that's contributed for the ladies, for the women who are amateur radio operators, and I mean young women as well as old women. Hi, hi. The article is in the YL, Young Ladies, section of World Radio. It's headed CQYL, CQYL. The author, Cheryl Muir, M-U-H-R, call N0WBV. Whether you like to contest, are an avid DX, or just like to get on and rag chew, that's converse, there are YLs to be found on the radio and around the world. The YL voice may often help you get through quickly in a pileup, but it helps if you have a rare prefix during some of the contests. Of course, big beams and a kilowatt can also help you get through faster as well. I was pleased to hear a number of YLs on during the CQ Worldwide SSB contest recently. Two of the YLs, though I only worked one, were participating as part of the contest effort of the J3A, that's Juliet 3 Alpha team, on Grenada. I also worked a YL as part of the JA7YAA, that's Juliet Alpha 7 Yankee Alpha Alpha Japanese team. JA prefixes are Japanese. J3s are Grenada. They all change, folks. You have to stay awake. A number of YLs participated in their university amateur radio clubs, though they may be harder to track on CW, that's code, as there are no female voices to give them away. You will find a number of YLs on during the contest for CW as well. The contests are a great way to work a YL award, such as the YL-DXCC and YL-WAS, that's Work to All American States. Speaking of DXYLs, there will be a number of YLs attending the International YL meeting in Mumbai. It is happening as I write this, and I just happen to know a couple of the YLs in attendance, so stay tuned in the next column for more about Mumbai, India. Jeannie Parker. Jeannie's call is K6UVF, slant, VU3RHY. Recently spoke to the San Fernando Valley Amateur Radio Club about her trip to Andaman and Nicobar Islands, where she got to operate during the VU4 Hamfest 2006. Subpart, where are all the YLs and hams? Where are all the YLs going? The SALARCs, that's an acronym, have disbanded. Now there are rumors of a club in California that may disband as well. It isn't just the YL clubs. All throughout amateur radio, there is a disturbing trend of clubs quietly going away. Recently, the Colorado YLs held a discussion to decide the fate of their club, which has been in existence since 1961. The decision? Keep the club going. Though many members did decide not to go overboard in offering services, the club balked at the thought of disintegrating altogether. Marty Wiesel, called K0EPE, was one of the staunchest supporters of the club and is one of the charter members. She was thrilled that the club wants to fight to stay alive. But why do clubs, YLs or not, have to fight to stay alive? There are a number of clubs all over the world that are making these same decisions. Does a club want to stay a club and keep functioning in the amateur radio world, or is someone ready to throw in a towel and let the club disband? Recently, I have heard many comments on how poor the band condition is. While I do agree we are in a down cycle, I do not believe the bands are dead. Though 10 meters never opened up in Colorado, 15 meters was on more than expected throughout the day during the CQWW, that's CQ Worldwide SSB contest. This leads me to believe that the bands aren't dead. There is just no one listening. Remember to get out there and both call and listen. We need operators to do both to prove that the bands aren't completely dead. The good news is that the rumor mills all seem to say the same thing, and that is during the next cycle peak. Now, folks, that's the sunspot cycle, which has an average of about 11 years from high to low, historically. The bands will be awesome. I hope this is true. I also hope that there will still be YLs out there to work by the time, quoting, the band comes back. Subsection. How to keep a club together. One of the reasons that clubs are disbanding is that they lack members. There are two types of members to lack. First, there may be a number of club members, but no one wants to volunteer for office or help out at the hamfests. Second, the club members may be slowly becoming silent keys. They're dying, folks. This afternoon, I attended a memorial service for Marshall Quait, Q-U-I-A-T, call A-G-0-X. He was an institution in amateur radio. He'd fought for the rights of hams all over and set many legal precedents in Colorado that are now used nationwide to help keep amateur radio alive. Marshall cared about people and was always eager to help get someone new on the air. Marshall was the one who set up my then newly licensed OM, that's old man, known as husband, John, called KT0F, Kilo Tango Zero Foxtrot, in front of a radio and said, "Okay, now get on the air." When we lose amateur radio operators as silent keys, we will always have the void they left behind. But we need to follow Marshall's example and prevent the hobby from dying by bringing in young hams. John was only 11 at the time that Marshall told him, "Here's the radio, so what's stopping you?" Okay, so I paraphrased some, but this is the gist of the story. It is important to encourage new ham operators, especially the ones whose interest gets sparked by friends, family, or school, to get involved in amateur radio. Take Hannah Milivor, M-U-L-I-V-O-R, call KC2NHV. That's Kilo Charlie 2, November Hotel Victor. A 10-year-old whose interest was sparked by her father, Philip, called WW2E. New ham radio operators, no matter what their age, are the new blood that will keep us from asking which is the next club that is going to disband. The next question will be, why aren't there any amateurs on when the bands are open? Subsection. I need to hear from you. Please let me know what you are doing in amateur radio. I know there are YLs, young ladies, women, out there who are into every aspect of ham radio, and I need to hear from you. Trust me, even though one of my cats is named Ariel, and she likes to nap on the radio, she doesn't make for a good YL amateur radio story. Send me your news. I hope all your radio dreams come true in 2007. The author, Cheryl, C-H-E-R-Y-L, Muir, M-U-H-R, can be reached at the following website, email. Her call, n0wbv@earthlink.net. Or you can write to Cheryl at P.O. Box 342-342, Littleton, Colorado, C-O, zip code 80160. And she thanks you very, very much. Well, let's keep going here with old-timer radio. Let's throw a little bit of nostalgia on the fire and keep the thing sizzling, folks. The title of the piece is An International Telegrapher's Reunion. The author, Jim Wades, W-A-D-E-S. Jim's call is WB8SIW, Whiskey Bravo 8, Sierra India Whiskey. And there's a very nice black and white photograph of a large group of, telegraphers, huh? Today, most individuals view the electromagnetic telegraph as an obsolete technology that died out in the 19th century when the telephone was invented. A slow and cumbersome system of dots and dashes, most often poorly represented in old Western movies of the past. In reality, the telegraph was an extremely efficient method of communications, which saw extensive use well into the post-war era in a variety of applications ranging from train dispatching to press service, pipeline work, brokerage operations, and commercial telegraph and cable service. Even the Bell System utilized telegraphy to coordinate the repair and maintenance of long-distance telephone toll circuits. In fact, the last commercial landline telegraph circuits in the United States were in use into the 1980s, and commercial telegraphy was in use even longer in some foreign countries. As you might expect, there are still a significant number of individuals around who were employed as operators, and many of these men and women continue to use Morse code to communicate with their friends and associates throughout the United States and Canada. On 02 and 03 June 2006, many of these operators gathered at Dearborn, Michigan for an International Telegraphers Reunion. The event was on Friday evening with an open house at the Dearborn Marriott Hotel. Two telegraph offices were set up and connected to the Canadian National Telegraph Hub at Toronto and the U.S. National Telegraph Hub at Oswego, Michigan. These hub facilities permit multiple telegraph offices to be interconnected via the public switch telephone network. Those unable to attend the event in person were able to burn up the wire, as they say, and converse in Morse with their friends who were attending the event. Throughout the evening, the two telegraph offices were in constant use, and for an all-too-brief period, one could once again hear first-class professional operators practicing their craft. Younger hotel staff members were surprised to see telegraphy in use for the first time, and older operators were thrilled to hear the room filled with the sound of two busy Morse circuits going full speed. It was like taking a step back into the past. On Saturday, the festivities continued with a tour of the famous Henry Ford Museum in Greenfield Village, followed by a banquet which included the viewing of two historic films and a presentation on the early history of radio. An invocation was transmitted in Morse by Lavina Shaw, who began working as telegrapher while still in her teens in lonely outposts in northern Canada in the 1940s. The invocation was relayed throughout North America via the Canadian Telegraph Hub. Operators throughout the United States and Canada then had an opportunity to stand up and tell the group about their telegraph careers. One could once again hear familiar names of the past, such as New York Central, Western Union, and Postal Telegraph. Unlike radio amateurs who utilize the international or continental code, landline telegraphers in North America utilize the American Morse code, originally developed by Morse and Vail. The American Morse code is unique in several ways. First, it contains three different lengths of dash for T, L, and the numerical zero. Likewise, many characters consist of only dots, which are spaced to produce unique rhythm patterns. Some combinations have alternate meanings in American Morse. For example, da 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 dit is the letter J. Da 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 dit is the numeral 1. As you might expect, an operator using American Morse must have a well-refined sense of rhythm and a good fist to hold down a busy circuit. When the first undersea cables were deployed, their electrical characteristics were such that the spaced characters of the original Morse code were difficult to distinguish. Therefore, the familiar international code was developed. This code was adopted throughout the world for all telegraphic applications except in North America, where the telegraph industry was well established. Furthermore, the older American Morse code is approximately 30% faster than the international code due to the many all-dot combinations. This likely provided some financial incentive for its continued use. While the commercial use of the electromagnetic telegraph is now a part of our past, former telegraphers and those who have learned the art purely from a historical interest continue to utilize it. Throughout the efforts of members of the Morse Telegraph Club, operators may interconnect their authentic electromagnetic telegraph instruments via the public switch telephone network or the Internet. All that is required is a simple, homemade interface device and modem. Some members even use amateur radio, driving a sounder through a simple tone decoding device connected to their receiver. Unfortunately, many radio amateurs were unaware or unable to stop by the open house at the International Telegraphers Reunion. However, one may still see Morse in use in April when Morse Telegraph Club chapters throughout the United States and Canada hold an annual Morse Day event in honor of Samuel Morse's birthday. Each local gathering features operators exchanging messages in American code using authentic instruments. Likewise, Many MTC chapters assist with steam train excursions and even Civil War reenactments throughout the year. If you would like to locate a Morse demo or perhaps find out more about how to become involved in landline Morse activities, stop by the MTC Morse Telegraph Club webpage at the following www.morsetelegraphclub.org. Let's say we take a quick peek at Newsfront, World Radio Newsfront, amateur radio news courtesy of the ARRL Letterin Newsline. Well, his obituary, first of all, Marshall Quait, Quait, Alpha Golf Zero X-ray, AG0X, silent key. Former ARRL Rocky Mountain Division Director Marshall Quait, AG0X, has become a silent key. In addition to his years of volunteer service to the ARRL, AG0X was also a notable contributor to amateur radio antenna law. He was an attorney by profession who had also served as a judge and a Colorado state legislator. Recognizing his contributions to both the league and the nation's ham community in 2000, the ARRL Board of Directors elected him as an honorary vice president. Marshall Quait, Alpha Golf Zero X-ray, died on Sunday, 15 October 2006, at the age of 84. A memorial service was held on 01 November 2006 in Denver, Colorado. Upcoming joint U.S.-Canada special event. An international special events station will be set up in early March 2007 to demonstrate cooperation between Canadian and American amateur radio operators in the area of emergency communications preparedness. The joint effort between Radio Amateurs of Canada and the American Radio Relay League will be held at the historic Marconi Memorial Station on Signal Hill, St. John's, Newfoundland, the reception point of the first transatlantic wireless transmission in 1901. This will be the first time such an official cross-border activity has been conducted, and hams from across the United States and Canada are urged to participate. According to the event's sponsors, virtually all modes will be operated over a two-day weekend. The exact date of this joint U.S. and Canadian operation will be announced shortly. That was furnished to World Radio Newsfront via RAC, via Southgate News, ARN. For you DXers, those chasers of those marvelous little signals, Lakshadweep Islands to host December D-Expedition. The Lakshadweep Islands, which are the second most wanted DXCC entity, will host two D-Expositions during November. One is a team sponsored by the Amateur Radio Society of India. It intends to activate the island with the call sign VU7LD, Victor Uniform 7, Lima Delta. A second group, under the auspices of the National Institute for Amateur Radio, has announced plans to operate as Victor Uniform 7, Romeo Golf, from the island in honor of the late Indian Prime Minister, Rajiv Gandhi, whose call sign was VU2RG, Victor Uniform 2, Romeo Golf. The VU7LD expedition will run 01 through 30 December 2006, while the VU7RG team will operate 01 through 10 December 2006 and probably will be gone by the time this reaches you. 60 Indian hams, including a number of well-known DXers, are expected to participate in these twin operations. Now, folks, this is your Rita Bob. Of course, I know that had already passed, but it just is a perfect illustration of the marvelous excitement that is generated on the amateur radio frequencies by ham radio operators all over the world, be they YLs, ladies, or gentlemen. It's just there for you just to keep listening, and don't just listen. You have to pop in a call sign, and in order to do that, you have to work at getting a license or an upgrade in license to work certain frequencies where a lot of the DXers sort of hide out. And that's where the Courage Handyhem system comes in. If you're in some way disabled or impaired, I hate that word handicap, but we all know what it means. Why don't you get in touch with the Courage Handyhem system at those particular addresses that I give you at the beginning and the end of these recorded messages? I'll give it to you right now again. It's the Courage Handyhem system. Their telephone number is area 763-520-0512. You can email them at handyham@courage.org. And, of course, if you have a computer capability, great website, www.handyham.org. And, in fact, the director of the Courage Handyhem system, Pat Tice, does a weekly e-letter. Comes out on Wednesdays. And I'll tell you, if you didn't or don't know much about ham radio and all the nuances, especially with regard to handicapped individuals, it's a marvelous website that garners information from other sources and passes it on to you as a member of the Courage Handyhem system. Let's continue with some of that news again. California agency coordinate disaster planning drills. That's probably a good idea, folks, because I'm recording this on the day after Christmas, December 26th, here in Dartmouth, Massachusetts, right near Cape Cod. And in the last week, there have been three or more, 3.4, 5, 6, or 7 earthquake tremblers in that St. Andreas Fault area. That includes San Francisco, folks, in case you didn't know it. So let's see what it says. Amateur radio was in evidence when several California cities joined forces to see how well they might operate together in time of disaster. Ham radio was included when cities, school districts, hospitals, and others in Southwest Riverside County gathered in a conference room 24 October 2006 for a mock disaster response exercise intended to evaluate how the different organizations could work together to better protect the lives and safety of their separate constituencies. The scenario used was of wildfire spreading in six areas of the county. This, in turn, choked up freeway traffic, injuring more than 100 people, cut off electricity for several thousand more, and threatened the safety of tens of thousands of others. The groups taking part had run drills like the one before, but none had done so with more than one other organization. This exercise brought the city governments of Murrieta, Temecula, and Lake Elsinore under the same roof with administrators from local school districts, fire departments, law enforcement agencies, hospitals, and utilities. The well-planned drill underscored the need for a variety of communications platforms. This included amateur radio, as well as broadcasters, the internet, and cellular telephone systems. It now looks as if hams will be a part of any long-range disaster planning for the Riverside County area. And that was supplied by CGC, the Californian, through AR Newsline. One quickie here. AMSAT announces SuitSat 2. You heard me. Suit. Like you wear. SuitSat 2, a second discarded Russian space suit, may soon be orbiting the Earth loaded with ham radio gear as SuitSat 2. Delegates to the recent AMSAT Space Symposium in San Francisco were told that a second SuitSat is on the drawing boards and that it will be more sophisticated than the SuitSat 1. Lou McFadden, W5DID, headed the SuitSat 1 hardware team. He told those at the symposium that the SuitSat 2 would incorporate some features his team didn't have the chance to accomplish the first time around. For example, the second SuitSat will have an onboard amateur radio transponder using digital signal processing technology. Solar panels, something SuitSat 1 did not have, will be used to energize the hardware and recharge SuitSat 2's batteries. With the improvements, SuitSat 2 could have an operational lifetime of 6 months or longer. While no specific date has been announced for it to be deployed, theoretically, the ISS International Space Station crew could launch SuitSat 2 during a spacewalk as early as next fall. That's about it from AMSAT, folks, ARRL and others, combined here on AR Newsline. This brings us to a conclusion of the Courage Handyhem System recording of World Radio Magazine 2007, This production is of the Courage Handy Ham system, and that's only for the use of eligible Handy Ham members only. Any other use may violate copyright laws. Happy New Year, folks. 73s and 1BLF.